After 146 Grand Prix, the streak is over for the Big Three. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Yes, you've really got to go back 146 races for the last time we had a race winner that wasn't Ferrari, Mercedes, or Red Bull. Yes, this is a miracle. Welcome to episode 261 of Motorsport 101. I think it's 261. Am I right, King?
Yes, it is 261. Right, I write it down in the set list now for a reason.
I do. You do. And I completely ignored that, and I still got it right. Go ahead. Welcome to episode 261 of Motorsport 101, and we are truly in the presence of a miracle, so much so that one of us even dressed up for the occasion. Hello, RJ O'Connell, how's it going?
I'm just here to celebrate my team, my beloved team from Faenza, Italy, once known for 20 years as Minardi F1 Team, once known as Scuderia Toro Rosso, following the purchase of Minardi by the Red Bull Soft Drinks Company. Now known as Scuderia AlphaTauri, following the rebranding to promote their clothing line, my team that previously won the 2008 Italian Grand Prix at Monza with your friend and ours, Sebastian Vettel, has won again in 2020. It's a new day. It's a new era. I've got all the gear thanks to uncompensated sponsors at RetroGP.com for my attire. This flag I got on eBay, it's still really awesome. I am excited. Holy crap.
As you do. I love that two of my co-hosts have had moments of glory this year on this show, in this motorsport year. And there's me being a Ferrari supporter, and our stock has never been lower. I love it. It doesn't hurt at all. King, how's it going?
Going well. Excited for this upcoming weekend of MotoGP action. Funnily enough, I didn't see this race live. I watched it on a unintentional tape delay later on that day, because I woke up. I forgot who tweeted it out, but a picture of Gasly on the podium by himself, and pretty much the caption was like, "Man, whoever missed this race, look at this picture, is probably real confused right now." And I just replied, "Yeah, I'm real confused right now."
I think it was, "What the hell just happened?" I think the phrase you were looking for on your Twitter was. And that's entirely fair, because we had a race winner in Formula 1 that was 500-1 to win this Grand Prix on Thursday in one of the all-time great Formula 1 shocks in modern history. Pierre Gasly is a Formula 1 race winner. No, that's not a lie. That actually happened. And this podcast will try to deconstruct and break down just how we got to this point. It's going to take some time. So I'll get the housekeeping out of the way from now. You can find us right here on youtube.com/motorsport101, unless you're listening to us via audio, in case you are. That's where our YouTube channel is. Our Twitter handles are right down below if you're watching on YouTube. If not, they're at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. Cam isn't here for this one. Sadly, he's having a nap. He'll be back soon enough. To be fair, he's probably still dreaming like Pierre Gasly actually won the race, and it's probably still just like something kind of Inception or something. You know, to follow our podcast Twitter, you can at Motorsport_101. It's our Twitter account's 4th birthday of the day. Happy Yay! Celebration of the reboot, everybody. Way! You'll love to see it. You can follow us on there at Motorsport_101. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Motorsport101. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. We've got one more episode of catch-ups to go through, and then we are officially back on pace. Woohoo!
Since we're recording an episode now, wouldn't that mean we're behind even more?
When will then be now? Soon.
It's wibbity-wobbity timey-wimey stuff, King. You wouldn't understand. So until then, that's on the $5 tier on our Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $10 gets you into the Supporters Club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. And The Kick, the book written by me, is now in the $15 tier as well, so check that out if you haven't already. Let's get in to the Italian Grand Prix.
Oh my god, what just happened? Pierre Gasly is a Formula One Grand Prix winner, and he held off Carlos Sainz's McLaren. Where was Mercedes? Where was Ferrari? Where was the senior Red Bull team?
What just happened? So let's figure this all out. Let's go back to Saturday for a moment here, because we've got to give a mention to qualifying. Lewis Hamilton, on pole position once again, set the fastest average speed lap in the history of Formula One. I think it was a 118.8. It was an average speed of 164.2 miles an hour. Pretty brisk. I would say that's the fastest lap in F1 history, but I fear the second layout of Bahrain later in the year may have something to do with, have to say about that by the time we get there in November. But for now, we like a cool record, and that is a cool record. Valtteri Bottas just behind by a nice number of thousandths, if I do say so myself. And to everyone's surprise, Carlos Sainz, third for McLaren. I still have no idea how good this car actually is.
Oh, man. And I mean, if you did listen to Carlos Sainz's radio, he was...
What did he say, King?
They were a bit frustrated. Carlos thought he was going to get the win. He really thought if the race was just one lap longer, would have had the win.
Yeah, because it seems like where this car is really quick is on high-speed circuits like Red Bull Ring, Monza.
They
built a pretty efficient car, and credit to McLaren, they had a weapon this weekend. You would figure that if anybody was going to be the favorites to win, if the sky fell out and all of our top three teams, Mercedes, Red Bull, and yes, we still consider Ferrari one of the top three, if anything bad happened to them, McLaren were probably odds on favorites. But nothing like that would ever happen, because Formula One is subject to the laws of inertia. I think we were pretty pessimistic going into this race until...
We'll get into that, because it was a very topsy-turvy sort of grid. I mean, yeah, Bottas was second to round off the front row, but we had Carlos Sainz Jr. in third, we had Checo on the second row in fourth, Max Verstappen down in fifth. He's normally been best of the rest so far this season, and he was barely ahead of Norris and Ricciardo. Very, very close fight on the, shall we say, rows 2, 3, and 4. On that one. In case you're wondering where Ferrari was in all of this, Vettel gets knocked out in Q1, Charles Leclerc gets knocked out in Q2, and my brother made a lot of money on this Discord server by betting that both Ferraris would get knocked out before Q3.
Hey King, is this result good for Ferrari? Like, how bad is this?
Well, my short film, referenced on an earlier episode of the show, yeah, Ferrari's still dead. Ferrari's still dead.
Still dead.
Their worst cumulative qualifying results since 1984.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the last time both Ferraris qualified outside the top 10 at Monza.
Over 30 years ago.
Yeah, not great. Anywho, race start. And, Valtteri Bottas has had a terrible getaway. He's dropped down to fifth. Oh, thanks for coming, everybody. That was a fun race. Let's get out of town. Hamilton's going to win this by half a minute. And that's what everybody was probably thinking about the first 20 or so laps of this race, even after the first round of stops on the soft compound tyre. We just thought, well, that's Hamilton gone. He can dial it down and nurse the car and win this comfortably. But hey, you know, with all the traffic that's around, we might just get, you know, a McLaren on the podium. That would be nice. You know, there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of people that like Carlos Sainz. You know, Lando was up there, pulled off a brilliant overtake on Valtteri to get up to fourth. That was pretty cool. The big flashpoint in this race, which we'll get to, because the on-track action wasn't particularly captivating in the first half of this race, was Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc has a massive snap of oversteer while going through the Parabolica, loses control of the car, puts it in the outside wall. Safety car is called. For the second time,
because if we rewind just a couple laps, Kevin Magnussen has a power unit failure. That brings out our first safety car, and we're thinking we're back to racing, and then as soon as we're back to racing, another safety car. And now both Ferraris are out because Sebastian Vettel's had a brake failure and is pretty much done. So if you're a Ferrari fan, you're thinking, oh, at least this is over quick.
Yeah, I was delighted. I was like, this is a quick and painless death this time around. I don't know about the long, excruciating one where Vettel limps home in 13th place and no one gives a shit. I was like, hey, I've got an out this week. His brakes failed at 210 miles an hour. Jesus.
Though, as during that first yellow, that first initial yellow where K-Mag's car fails, and it seems like, hey, maybe he's going to try to get this down pit lane. He doesn't quite get to the entry. Mm. And during that first initial yellow stage, a certain AlphaTauri driver comes down pit lane and takes advantage of this. And the reason why there was initial yellow, race control is figuring out how they're going to handle this, how they're going to deal with Kevin Magnussen's car. They come to the quick realization that, we're going to have to bring out the safety car. We can't do a virtual because people can still come down pit entry. We need the marshals out there to either pull Magnussen's car back behind the barrier or push it into pit entry. And it's like, hey, if we bring out the safety car, might as well just get it into pit lane. And that's what they did.
Yeah, they could not fit his stricken Haas down that inside slip road just before pit entry. No, these cars are a lot bigger than cars of yesteryear. You can't fit a modern day hybrid down that lane, so they had to close off the pit lane so they could have the marshals push his stricken Haas down the pit road instead to safety.
Oh, like so even if they had to push it back, they would still have to close the pit lane because the marshals would be standing in the pit lane.
Yeah, it's far too close. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, the pit lane was closed. Remember that. It becomes very important two laps later because once Charles Leclerc comes in, it's the wall, there's a safety car.
It happens before then. When the first safety car comes out, a lot of people thinking, the safety car came out, we can take advantage of this, we're just going to pit now.
And this is the most important part of the race because Lewis Hamilton and Antonio Giovinazzi both enter the pit lane while the pit lane is closed. This is a serious breach of the rules, like for obvious reasons. You really, really shouldn't enter a closed pit lane. Just throwing that out there. I don't think that needs a long explanation as to why that's probably a bad idea. Stewards immediately look at it while the race is red flagged because off during Charles's second safety car. When that happened, they had to red flag the race because of damage to the air fence. Those are the fence in general. Yeah, RJ.
Yeah. By the way, shout outs to the F1 TV Pit Lane channel for being able to point out something because Alex Jakes was right on the money. He spotted that the pit lane was closed as Lewis Hamilton was coming in. Meanwhile, Ted Kravitz is just like, why is nobody else coming into the pit lane? Lewis Hamilton's made it easy to win this race. Before realizing.
Me watching after the fact, not knowing about anything that happens, when I see Kevin Magnussen's car there, I just assume pit lane's going to be closed. Like, that was, in my mind, a no-brainer. I was freaking out when I saw Lewis pull in.
Yeah, even in real time, I thought, hang on a minute, there's a car like 50 feet away. Why are you going into the pit lane? Like that surely was closed. And I love that Hamilton tried to blame, I thought the light was on pit entry. There is not a light on pit entry.
Yeah, there's specifically not a light where like you would traditionally see one at the end of the pit wall. Because at Monza, if you're at that point, it is too late to back out. You couldn't pull out if you wanted to.
Yeah, you're coming into that pit lane maybe at 150, 160 miles an hour at full racing speed coming out of the Parabolica. But like, if you can see a light there, you're not getting your car stopped in time. I don't care how good F1 brakes are these days.
Yeah.
Just
to specifically point out, at Monza, the pit entry light is two light boards on the outside of the exit of Parabolica. pretty yeah. much where you're last going to be on the racing line before you decide to pull in.
Indeed. So, as the red flag is going on, the stewards are having a look at the incident. It took about half an hour for them to fix the damage to the fence. Mm-hmm. And then the clanger drops.
We're not going to mention before that where Lewis gets on a scooter and goes.
I was going to mention this in the same sentence. Because Giovinazzi and Lewis Hamilton both get pretty much the maximum penalty on the board, barring a red flag, a 10-second stop-and-go penalty for entering a closed pit lane. And as King pointed out, Hamilton immediately gets out of the car, gets on his scooter, and strolls his way to the steward's office because he wants a word with Michael Massey himself, which I thought was cute.
Well, Michael Massey's not the race steward. They're like, for the first time that I can remember on an FIA race broadcast, they cut to the steward's office, not while Lewis was there.
Oh, they did, didn't they? Yes.
But early on, and they list out who the stewards are. Obviously, like, two guys no one's ever heard of because they're just pretty much automotive executives, and the driver steward for this race weekend.
Mr. LeMond, wasn't
it? Mr. LeMond, Tom Kristensen.
One-time prospective Minardi F1 team driver, Tom Kristensen. I will have you all know.
It all goes full circle. So yeah, Hamilton goes into the shoes office and has it out with Kristensen. Although apparently, I know he's not race steward, but I know Michael said after the race, he said after the race that, oh, you know, it was a great talk, apparently. You know, he actually said there was no problem at all with Hamilton coming there and having a chat. We were all for it, so that was nice. It was apparently all civil. So Lewis didn't throw his scooter out of the window or something. We didn't get like one of those like cartoons just where just a scooter comes flying out of the front window. Nothing like that. Thankfully, it was all civil. But yeah, 10 seconds.
I was fully expecting Lewis to get a tech there. Where's the technical foul?
Wrong sport. We're not in our basketball podcast just yet.
No, Marcus Morris was not there in the steward's office waiting to step on his foot or something along those lines. But yeah, as I said, 10 seconds stop go penalty for the pair of them. Meanwhile, Lance Stroll got a free pit stop because he hadn't come in yet, and he was able to change tires in the pit lane. Because
we
that
were
is
all
the
thinking that
rule.
Stroll was in the fucking catbird seat because, you know, he's got the tracing point and he's just made a free pit stop for tires, which last time I remember was like, that's pretty much how Haas scored points in their very first race.
Similar
circumstances.
Because Grosjean didn't run, like, the first race they were in, Grosjean, remember that, Ruth Buskin was a team strategist, and she was just like, running through the pit, stick the hard tire on, and we don't have to stop again during the race. Perfect! Sixth place on debut. Love to see it. This is an old rule that's come up before. I remember Monaco 2011 was probably the most famous incident of it, when Pastor Maldonado put it in the fence at Tabac, and Vettel was under all sorts of pressure with Button and Alonso behind him running two-stop strategies. And then the red flag came out. Vettel was allowed to change tyres on the grid. And that pretty much killed the race from a competitive standpoint. It was like, oh, well, what's the point of this now? He's on a fresh set, and that's how the race ended. Vettel, Button and Alonso right next to each other. McLaren were not happy about this rule.
I don't like it either. You shouldn't, getting a free pit stop under a red flag.
I'm not a fan of it.
Feels competitively unfair. I'm fine with, hey, maybe I do have to change my tires, but you shouldn't be able to restart the race in the exact same spot.
Change it so it's like a back of the grid for the restart if you do change your tires. Maybe that might consider somebody worth taking the gamble.
You have to move to the back, or maybe it's a 5 or
a
10 place, make sure that it's positional place is not a time penalty, because time penalties don't really work under a red flag because everyone is stationary.
Don't bring me back to those days of MotoGP and aggregate time back in the early 2000s. Oh, those were messy. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there has to be some sort of opportunity cost to changing your tyres in the pit lane under a red flag, because there's no punishment for that otherwise. And if you could do it, everybody could do it. I know, obviously, teams are limited for how many fresh sets they've got left in the back. We saw this during MotoGP in Styria with their red flag and how it hurt Joan Mir's race, a race that he was probably going to win before Maverick put it in the catch fence. There has to be some sort of opportunity cost for changing tyres under red. Because a free pit stop is, you've basically saved like 30 seconds by doing that if you haven't had a mandatory stop yet. And that's just ridiculous. And I was not a fan of that at all. And Lando Norris pointed that out. But yeah,
Dre, I do gotta say, you know what can really wipe out that advantage really quick, especially when at the race steward's discretion they decide to restart this race with a standing start? Is if you completely bog the start. Lance Stroll, the start master, bogs it down. He has no grip in the tires. That's effectively his chance of winning this race from the front. Pretty much done and dusted because Hamilton has to come in at the end of the lap to serve his penalty. So who gets the top spot now?
They didn't wait the maximum three laps for Hamilton to serve his penalty. He came in on the second lap available to do that. I know Hamilton was already thinking, I can break out a 5-second lead before I come in for this penalty, which I thought, dear God, in that Mercedes, he probably isn't joking. But he comes in, and the most satisfying gif I've seen on Twitter of all time was seeing Hamilton with the onboard camera in pit lane for a stop and go, just seeing his camera slowly come down the timing tower as he serves his penalty. On the full racing conditions, remember, you can't serve a penalty under the safety car, so he has to do it when there's green flag conditions out. Works out about 35 seconds by the time it's all said and done. A run through the pits is about 18, chuck in another 10 for obviously the time itself, and then maybe another 4 or 5 for the coming in, coming out part. So yeah, it's about a 32-35 second penalty, depends on the pit lane by the time it's all said and done. I would know, because the last time I saw that, I've seen Vettel serve two of those in the last 3 years. Anyway, it put a certain someone to the front of the queue, and it was one Pierre Gasly. And amazingly, Gasly was at the front, had a couple of seconds in hand. Meanwhile, Carlos Sainz had to fight his way to the front of the queue. He did. He overtook Lance Stroll and was
he overtook Kimi Raikkonen, who had his whole 5 minutes of fame, and that lasted about as long as
something that didn't last very long. Bless him. I love Alfa Romeo for this, by the way. Props to Alfa. They're a team that knows they have nothing to lose, so they slapped a pair of soft tyres on his car, thinking they can go half distance on a pair of soft tyres. Way to go, Alpha! I admire the boldness of your team to have a go and swing for the fences, even if you came up short. Unlucky, it almost got you some points. Bad luck. That was the only real action, unfortunately. This was pointed out by a lot of people after the race that, you know, the top six didn't really move very much, but apart from Kimi Raikkonen sliding down the order on a pair of used soft tyres. But it cleared the way for Carlos Sainz, and shout out to Lance Stroll, by the way, who pulled off a brilliant round the outside move on Kimi to get him into turn four. Lovely stuff from him. It turned into a one-on-one dogfight between Pierre Gasly and Carlos Sainz for the W. Sainz was reeling him in at a rate of knots towards the end, about 3-4 tenths a lap. I put it out there on Twitter that Pierre Gasly is about to win a Grand Prix of 6 to go, and I got a little bit nervous in the end there, thinking, oh no, am I going to get one of those?
It was a little bit nerve-wracking because Sainz clearly had the advantage down the straightaways, but Gasly could just pull up so much speed coming through and out of the corners. Now, of course, that's a benefit of clean air talking, but that AlphaTauri looked like it was hooked up.
It was hooked up very well, and that's why I was so confident that Gasly was going to ride it out till the end, but I think he'd pushed a little bit too hard, and I think his tyres might have been a little bit too worn out, because I think it was the last three laps, Carlos had got the gap down to within a second on the penultimate lap of the race. He's in Gasly's DRS zone. He had a couple of cracks in it on the final lap. There were always going to be audacious dive bombs. I love that, again, team bosses, team principals are conservative. He got on the radio to Carlos and said, one at a time, Carlos. And then later on it was, you know, don't worry, second is good. Keep it clean. Don't do anything crazy. And then Carlos' response on the radio was, I want this win, Tom. That's what it's all about right there, ladies and gentlemen. He went for the win. He tried. Maybe one lap short. If that race was one lap longer, Sainz gets a really good run into turn one, and maybe, just maybe, he pulls that off. I would have loved this race if it had been one lap longer, but still, Who frigging cares? Pierre Gasly wins the Italian Grand Prix.
I love it. Ooh. I love it so much. Think about a guy who was unceremoniously dumped by Red Bull middle last season, was seen as a fallback option when he first got the Red Bull drive, was seen as a guy who just barely got over the line to win his GP2 title, was beaten by the same Carlos Sainz to the title in Formula V8s back in 2014. You know, here is Pierre, the guy who's always been seen as second best. And here he is, and he beats out a game Carlos Sainz, and he beats all these other guys to win it. And I think that's special. And if you think that, you know, generally speaking, the nicest guys don't always win in Formula One. I am so glad that it happened for Pierre on this day.
It was magic. I had a tear in my eye watching that finale. It was beautiful. And, you know, I'm trying too hard not to glorify adversity, because not everybody can handle some of the difficulties in life. But if anyone knows Pierre Gasly on a even close to personal level, you know that man's been to hell and back the last 18 months. We all know he was dumped by Red Bull in and out after 10 Grand Prix in the top flight team after a fantastic rookie season, one where he had a fourth place finish in his second ever race in Formula One in Bahrain. Got the Red Bull seat, was dropped after 10 races, was lied to by management and the way he was treated amongst that team in Red Bull was pathetic. And, you know, he was the subject of humiliation on Drive to Survive as well. Let's not forget that Horner was lying through his teeth about how they were talking about him, into the fact he was critical about him on Netflix for the world to see. We know how many new fans have come along simply via D2S and Season 2 and what it brought to the table. You know, he's gone back to AlphaTauri, well, was Toro Rosso back then. He's been phenomenal ever since. He had that second in Brazil where he outdrags Lewis Hamilton to the line in one of the real images of 2019 that defied the season. You know, we all know he lost his childhood friend, Antoine Hubert, at Belgium in the middle of all of that. And he even had his house robbed as recently as last month. He has had a goddamn rough time of it off the track, and for him to turn that around and to win, I called it the miracle in Monza. It might technically be the miracle of Monza 2 after what happened in 2008, but it was magic. Like, I gave it a 10 out of 10 on my race review, and it was an automatic 10 because I did not give a shit about what happened on track from an action standpoint, because this is a Grand Prix we will always remember. We will never, ever forget this one. This has been a sport where I mentioned, this was the 129th race of the hybrid era. It's been 146 since we didn't have we didn't have a big three member as we know it, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercs, win it. You got to go back even further for the last time you had a podium without them, over 150 Grand Prix. That was Hungary 2012. When Hamilton was still at McLaren with the two Lotus of Grosjean and Raikkonen next to him. This was about as crazy a modern day upset for F1 that we've ever seen. And that is why we stick through so many boring races. That's why we stick through Spain's and Belgium's and, you know, mediocre GPs. This is why we sit through them, because once a season, or maybe once every two or three seasons, we get something completely off the wall.
Once a decade.
And this was that race. This is a once in a decade sort of race. You don't ever see that on under normal circumstances. This was a magical Grand Prix, and
Did you know that Pierre Gasly was less than 4 months old when we had the last French winner, Olivier Panis at Monaco, the ultimate race of attrition? And to believe it's been that long since we had a French winner in Formula One.
Especially with how many French drivers we've gone through.
Yeah, Jesus. It's not like they've been lacking talent. Jesus. Right. I mentioned it as well, like, parallels. First F1 Grand Prix winner in 24 years, first French MotoGP winner in 21 years on the two-wheeled side of the game, thanks to Fabio Quartararo, he talked about in her F. So, a good year for Le Marseillais, if I do say so myself. Yeah. It's The shot of Gasly on the podium just taking it all in is going to be one of those legendary. He's going to be up there with Alonso's podium selfie from 2012 as just one of those magical shots where you just see him. He openly said it afterwards, just taking it all in.
Yeah.
And but having a thousand thoughts go through his head.
I don't give a damn if this is the only race he wins. It could be, he could be a one-hit wonder, or this could be the first of many wins to come. But we'll always have those memories of the time that Pierre Gasly won the Italian Grand Prix at Monza in an Italian-built car.
Did you know someone from Sweden actually put 20 cents on predicting?
I heard about this! How much did they get back on this?
33,000 euros. Apparently it was 168,000 to 1.
Get that money, son.
If I was that dude, I'd be like, why didn't I put down the full euro on it?
Apparently it was like 20 leftover cents in the dude's account. So he just plopped the 20 cents on a miracle podium and he landed it. I've never seen a sporting upset bet on like that before. Apparently it was 168,000 to 1. What's the thought process behind something like that? Just like pick three names out at random on a dartboard and see what sticks.
Alcohol.
I don't even know.
Alcohol's my process.
Yeah, probably some whiskey was involved. It wouldn't surprise me. What a podium we got though. Gasly, Carlos Sainz Jr., who gets his second podium in his F1 career and the best finish of his career, and Lance Stroll, his first podium since Baku. Where he was third that day, so he matches his career high finish as well for Racing Point. So another plucky Racing Point podium, ladies and gentlemen. You'd love to see it. We drew one a year from Racing Point, and we got another one this year. So Lance, who, by the way, is a minor spoiler, now fourth in the championship. Yeah,
hell.
Lance Stroll. What a guy. What a year he's having. Let's get into the full results and break down some of the stories in between. As mentioned, and I can't believe I'm saying this again, Pierre Gasly, race winner at Monza in a 1 hour 47 thriller. Carlos Sainz Jr. second, just 0.4 of a second behind. A last lap dogfight in Formula One. When was the last time we saw that? What, maybe Austria 2016? Jesus. You love to see it. Lance Stroll on the podium in third. Great drive from him there. Just 3 seconds off the top as well. Lando Norris, the most disappointing fourth place finish you will probably ever see from the man, because he was gutted on Twitter afterwards, but he said, look at how far we've come if we're upset about finishing fourth.
Yeah.
Kind of says it all for the McLaren team, the way they've gone this season. Great result for him. Valtteri Bottas in fifth. Now, he never recovered from that bad start. He basically spent 50 laps looking at Lando Norris's rear end, which is something that's normally reserved for Twitter.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that's good. He had a radiator issue early on in the race. They used the red flag to fix it. Apparently, what they fixed, it still didn't cure all the ails. And Dre pointed out, they're like, hey, one thing this Mercedes doesn't do, because it doesn't have to do that often, is follow other cars. And I don't know if it was the way that Valtteri's car was set up, or it was just his mindset going into the race wasn't really attacking like it was when Hamilton was sent to the back of the grid, but he just couldn't make his way through the traffic.
Shout out to all the goddamn ham capers that hit on me after the race had finished saying, oh, Hamilton went from 17th to 7th. If this disproves that theory, he's Lewis Hamilton on new tyres in a car that's 2 seconds a lap faster than the midfield. Come on!
But like, the thing is that it is, like, Bottas should be driving better. It's not a question. Like, the reason why he's having trouble overtaking people is that an issue that the Mercedes car has where it's not designed to run behind other cars. Not in terms of, hey, too much dirty air. More like, hey, our car overheats too quickly. So if you want to pass them, have to do it quickly. Hamilton knows how to do that. He had no problem, but Bottas couldn't do it.
Yeah, you could see the amount of times in the second half of the race that Bottas had to weave out of the slipstream on straights to stop the car from overheating so much. It is a genuine Merckx problem. Of course, there's a little bit of dirty air factor in that for everybody. Yeah. I mean, even McLaren admitted that, yeah, the passing delta around here was still 1 second to 1.5 seconds in terms of pace advantage to pull an overtake off. But even so, apparently, according to Jason, Bottas may have had floor damage as well, which didn't exactly help his case. I think a lot of people also out there want to dunk on
Bottas. Didn't have damage. They said it after the race. They said it to Bottas during the race. Your car is fine.
Right. Because he thought he had a puncture the first time after the bad start as well. Like, we called it the phantom puncture on social media. It was not a ringing endorsement of Valtteri at all. And I know there's a lot of people out there that want him replaced in that car. I call it shiny hood ornament syndrome. Everybody wants the excitement of seeing a new big hitter. I remember Danny Pedrosa had this problem for years in MotoGP, where it was like, let's get someone new on the bike. And I was like, be careful what you wish for, because that person ended up being Jorge Lorenzo. And we all know how well that one turned out.
Again, we end up in a situation where, like, they mentioned after qualifying, this is the first time that Bottas was on the front row at Monza, period. Like, this is not a recent development that Bottas is not going through a slump. This is what he normally is like.
This is who he is. I've been telling people this on Twitter all season. This is who Bottas is. And I've said it before, I think a lot of people want him to be Nico Rosberg too. Hence the jokes about him having Sisu at the start of the year. Look, Bottas, to a degree, doesn't do himself any favours because he always talks about the improvements he's made in the off-season, a new mentality, a new approach. And unfortunately, us on social media, we're predatory towards those sorts of comments. I mean, we'll dunk on people when they don't pay out their end of the deal.
That Cam said over the weekend that really stuck out to me, that it's like, yeah, Bottas might not even be a title contender, but he's not even being a good teammate right now. He's not even fast enough to be a rear gunner. He's costing the team points.
Yeah, like, to be fair, this is the point where I was like, okay, it's actually worse than I thought. Like even last year, he still put up like 312, which is a good amount for a second Mercedes car. No one really had any major complaints about his season in general. You know, won a few races, didn't really do any major errors, just did his business really. We all know he's not Hamilton, and that's okay. He's going to open the door for Verstappen for second in the championship. Not the first time this has happened, because Vettel did this 2 years ago as well. Yeah. But that was more, I think, Vettel being spectacular than, or to a degree, in certain places, than the fact that Ferrari still had, you know, a much more competitive car compared to Mercedes, compared to what the grid is like now. But this is genuinely a performance-concerning problem. Tough break, he's already been re-signed for next year, eh, Mercedes?
That's fine. They don't deduct your Constructors' Championship earnings based on the margin with which you win the World Constructors' Championship. So Mercedes has nothing to worry about. Yep. Yeah, Bottas talks a big game. Everybody has to do that. Nobody comes into a season hyping up how they're excited to finish second, third, fourth in the championship.
Of course, everyone talks a big game, but no one talks a big game right after they lose a big game.
Now, I said it before, that's kind of Valtteri's problem. He kind of said it, like, I remember last year, he kind of set himself up here because he was talking about Sisu, the Finnish culture of, you know, perfection and, you know, being competitive. And then he goes and wins the first race in Australia. Ooh. And everybody was like, porridge boss, Bottas 2.0. And then it all fell apart in the second half of the year again. And they're all asking the same questions about Valtteri we're asking every year. Maybe it is George Russell time after all. But hey, like I wonder if there's a buyout clause in this contract, as King mentioned earlier. More about that on the second part of this doubleheader. Daniel Ricciardo ended up in sixth. In case you're wondering, Lewis Hamilton ended up in seventh, coming back from 17th after that 10-second stop-and-go penalty. Passed a lot of those cars out there for fun, got the fastest lap bonus, so he gets 7 points. Esteban Ocon in 8th, who had a fiery rant at the Renault team after the result and was told to basically shut up on the microphone by Cyril. This is not the time and the place.
Yeah, they got a big problem with Esteban's attitude, which is why they're really looking forward to Fernando Alonso coming into this team next year, because we know he would never do such a thing. This is the Alonso guy saying that. Get off Esteban's back for this.
He just saw a team lower than him in the Constructors' Championship win a Grand Prix. I'd be pretty pissed off too.
Yeah.
Especially when the team put him on the wrong tire strategy. Just saying. Like, you know.
We're heated that he didn't get that penalty from qualifying. But this wasn't something to be upset about.
No. Yep. No. Look, in those sort of scenarios, I will always back the man in the sweaty race car after an hour and 45 minutes driving a 200-mile-an-hour race car over the team 99 times out of 100. The one time being Fernando. Anyway. Sorry, RJ. Ninth to Nil Kvyat in the end, who must be feeling real egregious about that ninth place I was given out where his teammate fared. And Checo rounding off the points in 10th. And a shout out as well to Williams' best result of the year, Nicholas Latifi in 11th, just missed out on the points in the end. And if you haven't heard his final radio message to Claire regarding Williams, again, you probably already know the news. We'll talk about it in much more detail in our next episode. Very touching stuff indeed, as in basically what we will call the final Williams Grand Prix as we know them, so to speak. But very touching stuff indeed from him and his teammate George down in 14th. Although I can't say I approve of him having Haribo and popcorn on a pizza. Check their social media for more on that. Romain Grosjean 12th in the end, Kimi Raikkonen P13. Again, much respect to for Alpha for the balls for trying them on a soft tire there. I respect that in this game of inches and calculated risk that Alpha threw the house at it. Points for Alfa Romeo, ladies and gentlemen. Not literal points, but Motorsport 101 points. They count too. George Russell 14th. Alex Albon, who just had a rough day at the office. Time penalty right at the start for basically not giving Pierre Gasly a car width. Which, who knows, if it damaged Gasly's car, we may have been telling a very different story about this race in the end. It's funny how some of these things turn out. And even then, I think he had floor damage during the race itself, which I think crippled him all the way through. Just another rough weekend for Alex Albon. And Antonio Giovinazzi, who was pretty much in no man's land after his penalty, so he was down in 16th. One other name I haven't mentioned yet in this podcast, amazingly. Where was Max Verstappen? Well, after the restart, he also had a similar problem to Valtteri, was bogged in under traffic at the start, he had a bad start, was down to 6th place, and then when the restart happened, power unit problem. The Red Bull reckoned they were about to have a spectacular power unit failure, so they had to park his car in the pit lane before it happened. So a DNF for Max.
I have a take.
Go on.
I mean, this really isn't really a take because Drave kind of brought this up, but why are Christian Horner and Helmut Marko still here? They would have been fired for this kind of performance if they had been wearing red shirts and representing more Italian team for the performances they've been rolling in the last few years.
No, to be fair, King made it I did a post-race Q&A on Twitter at 2 in the morning. Don't ask, I've got no life. People were flooding my inbox with questions at 2 in the morning. I love my Twitter followers. They're fantastic. But one of the questions was, I put it out there as a hot take. I said there was more grounds to potentially change Red Bull's management than Ferrari's for the one spontaneous bad year more than the, quote, 7 mediocre ones that Red Bull had. And to be fair, it was King, and I give him full credit for it. He made the most valuable point on this where he said, look, basically called it what it is. It's the Arden Grand Prix team.
Yeah.
You know, Dimitris is not going to, you know, move these dudes along by now. It's basically one great big marketing project for Red Bull at this point. And, you know, it's basically Horner's team. He's been team principal there for, I think, 16 years now. Dr. Marko is his most trusted advisor.
He's been their only ever team principal.
Yeah.
From the very start. So, you know, we're going back 16 years now, I think, to when Red Bull were first a thing.
I'm just thinking something the way that team has been running, there have been successes, it's not working, and especially when a dude who you put on blast on premium over-the-top cable television streaming is out here beating your team while your senior team's out here doing nowhere. I can't even fault Alex Albon for this one. If anybody needs to go, I don't think it's Albon.
Yeah,
it's never a good
the situation. Like, even if Dieter Mateschitz wanted to replace Horner and Marko, Horner's the team's only team principal. Helmut Marko, his official position is Formula One advisor to Red Bull itself. So when Mateschitz asks for advice on who to replace Horner and Marko, the only two people he has to ask for advice is Horner and Marko.
It's just a sick system, man.
It's concrete. It's locked in place, and going to change. Like I said, strip the Red Bull away. Call it what it is. It's basically the Arden F1 team at this point, and that's not going to change anytime
from back
soon,
when Arden were good. Two iterations of a Junior Formula Championship ago.
Yeah, Jesus, and yet here we are, and we've mentioned it on this show before about the nature of that team, the comprehension of that team, how it's pretty much Verstappen City at this point, so much so that I distinctively remember Marko going into this weekend more or less admitting that they didn't have the same parts on Albon's car, how he was somewhat used as a guinea pig in his own team, and that might explain some of his shoddier performances. I don't think it factors for everything, but it was certainly an element as to why Max has probably been a bit better off a lot better off in that team scenario than what it is now. It's just another strike against Red Bull in the weird mismanagement of their team. They've been this number one, number two built team now since 2010. I remember the British Grand Prix that year. I remember they took away Webber's upgraded wing to help Vettel out and how much dissension that caused amongst the team, as well as other certain incidents in certain West Asian countries. But besides that, you know, it's been tumultuous at Red Bull, and this is no change. You know, this is kind of what Red Bull are, and I don't think that is going to change anytime soon. But quick look at the standings and championships and whatnot. Amazingly, despite all the chaos that happened and Lewis Hamilton having, quote, a bad day and finishing seventh, he actually still he still gains in the championship lead overall because Valtteri took chunks out of Verstappen, who DNF'd. So he's got a 47-point lead in the championship now over Valtteri, who's back in second on 117. Verstappen down to third on 110. Lance Stroll ahead of Lando Norris on the virtue of countback, i.e. more fourth-place finishes. Both on 57 points to round off the top five. Ooh, yes, yeah. Lance Stroll is the best of the rest right now.
Yeah, is that the kind of guy you really want to just cut because daddy's money? More on that next show.
Indeed. Now, you know what's crazy as well? You look at the Wikipedia page at the bottom, it only shows the top five of the race. Ferrari is no longer on the front page. That should say a lot about their state of play right now. Mercedes have a 123-point lead on Red Bull already, 281 to 158. McLaren now in third, still on 98. Racing Point, despite the penalty, now on 82 points. They're still fourth. Renault up to fifth on 71, ahead of Ferrari. No, seriously. Ferrari are sixth in the Constructors' Championship right
They're
now.
They're just trying to renew that rivalry from 2006. Qualifying, Ferrari is trying to renew their rivalry with Williams.
Down the bottom of the board, sure. Yeah, Ferrari are on 61. AlphaTauri now have 47 points after a big bump from a 27-point bump from this weekend, which I think might be the most points they've ever taken away from a race weekend. I'll have to check that one. Even maybe going back to the Toro Rosso days. Alfa Romeo still on 2 points. They've only had one car in. They've not had a car in the points since the opening round in Austria. Sigh! Haas on the 1 point, and Williams, as we know them, still on naught. Oh, dear God. What more needs to be said here besides watch this race?
Yep.
Just watch the damn race.
It is a classic.
It is a classic. My God, I'm glad I can say that about a Formula One race this year. Jesus. It was looking bad for a little while. But, yeah, we love to see it here, folks. Look. I know we dunk on F1 a lot here, right?
Yeah.
None of us here would love to see a better Formula One race than us three. Like, it's like when Brian Alvarez talks about when wrestling is bad, and he's like, look, when wrestling does well, I make a lot of money! Like, it's kind of the same for us. When F1 has a good day, you listen to us more. It's great. We love it. We even joked about the fact that our third most listened to country now is Italy. Hi, our Italian friends! We've got a home win!
Lord.
You love to see it!
Yeah!
She's shooting into the juniors, boys.
Yes, because second best thing that I saw all weekend behind Pierre Gasly, getting that win for AlphaTauri, proving all the haters, the critics, the doubters wrong. Mick Schumacher in a red car, won at Monza with a perfect start. And I watched this with my father, who's a big Michael Schumacher fan. Oh, that was just, it was perfect. Wins the feature race and is now a serious title threat.
Oh, yeah. Look, nature is healing. A Schumacher in a big red car wins at Monza. Imagine if the Tifosi was there, how nuts they would have gone if Mick Schumacher would have won. That would have been magical. Oh, well, I would have paid good money to see that reaction. Instead, we had cardboard cutouts in the stands.
Yeah, but it's not different than a normal Formula 2 race that I had a Grand Prix weekend.
Stop being that guy.
Watch more Formula 2. Look, I enjoyed this race. I really have fun watching this. And hey, shout out Luca Giotto, the resident fifth year fun haver, getting a podium at home.
That was a good drive from him. We had Christian Lundgaard on the podium. He's had a bad run of form the last couple of weekends. So Lundgaard right back at the top again in Monza. Good weekend from him. There was one critical moment that pretty much won it for Mick. He was struggling to deal with his Ferrari Driver Academy partner in crime, shall we say, Callum Ilott, until he stalls it in the pit lane.
Oh, man.
Cost him about 15 seconds and ended up dropping Callum all the way down to 6th in the end for the time by the time he got to the checkered flag. But, Mick wins. And
what
he's probably getting a
freaking start, though. I don't think we're talking enough about this. From 7th up to 2nd before you even get to the first chicane. That was
beautiful. He absolutely nailed it. We know these cars have got dodgy clutches at the best of times, and Mick absolutely nailed it. It was second by going around the outside into turn one. It was a beautiful sight. It pretty much won him the Grand Prix right there. And then, not that we knew it at the time, but a beautiful start from Mick Schumacher. Wonderful to see. He's racking up these podiums. It's now heavily rumoured he's going to get a Formula One free practice session somewhere between now and the end of the year. There was rumours it was going to be at Mugello. Probably not now is the latest I'm hearing, but probably at some point between now and the end of the year, he'll be in a Formula One car for realsies. it might be Haas. It might be Alpha. We don't quite know yet, but it's looking like he's going to get an F1 test. And hey, we did mention Matteo Bonotto said a couple of weeks ago that, Mick's next step is a Formula One team. Looking good for him. Looking good for him, shall we say. The sprint race.
Now,
I bet we were all rubbing our hands with it's going to be a fap fest on Twitter because Dan Ticktum dominated the race even after a virtual safety car to take the sprint race win.
Before we mention what happens, I missed the sprint race live, but watching it, I just saw one GIF that also had me saying, "What the hell happened?" Where you see the medical car pull into the race winner's grid slot, and Dan Ticktum gets out like it's the start of an episode of Raw.
It was brilliant. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was going to mention this, but you're absolutely right. This was hilarious to watch in real time because you had the overhead shot, they had the Parc Fermé position point out at the top of pit road, and it's the medical car that pulls in, and then Dak Ticktum comes out. It is just like a Raw return in the WWE. It's like, what's Dan Ticktum doing getting out of the medical car? What's the medical car doing in the number one position? I have so many questions. Now, to explain King's hilarious gif, and please find it on Twitter, because it is hilarious.
Oh, I'm including it in the edit of the show.
Oh, please do. Please do. I will pay good money for that. Yes, please. It was hilarious. So to explain what had happened fully, Ticktum wins the race. Now, we all raised an eyebrow because Ticktum suddenly parks his car just past the first chicane before Curva Grande and puts it in the grass. And we're all sitting there wondering, well, why has he gone and done that? Did he run out of fuels? The first question a lot of us came out with. And, well, turns out he kind of did. But not for the reason you'd expect. Now, to be fair, I had to delete this tweet because I was quite cynical because Ticktum has had car management problems over the course of his season in Formula 2, more specifically with tyres and temperament. But it might have explained why he was so much faster than everybody else. Maybe he burned too much fuel. But then I thought there was a virtual safety car in the race, because I think it was Felipe Drugovich who had it parked on the turn one apex.
Yeah, so
it was...
Drugovich got turned around at the chicane by one of the Nissany. Nissany turned him at the first chicane.
Back on form. He flipped Drugovich around at the opening chicane. By the way, like, if there's a tractor on the track, please make it an automatic safety car in future. Jesus Christ. Do not make it a VSC. Like, stewards, get this right. Like, people in the charge of race control, get this right, please. Anyway, now, it's made it even weirder because there was a virtual safety car in that race, which means cars are more likely going to have even more fuel than they normally would. So it didn't quite add up for me when it came through that Tictum had been disqualified from the race result for not being able to take a fuel sample.
Oh, man.
Because the stewards had to come out with a statement saying, no, potentially running out of fuel is not a valid reason to park a car after the cooldown lap. So we all thought, okay, what if Tictum's result gets overturned? And it was. And then Dams came out with their own statement after the result was changed to a disqualification. And then they said, well, our spec fuel tank cracked. And that led to a fuel leak in the car. And Tictum was using too much fuel as a result of the leak.
Yeah, and they in their statement, they said they axed the series to service the car. It's one of the things that I dislike about Formula 2 the most. It artificially rises the cost of competing in Formula 2.
Yeah.
The cars are heavily controlled. There are a number of components that teams are not allowed to alter or even maintain themselves, the fuel tank being one of them. You're not allowed to buy Formula 2 cars secondhand and run them in the championship.
Yeah,
you have to buy them from the series itself.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm just thinking, like, this is like the only series where like this quality control problem really comes up, F2 and F3, because you never hear about shit like this in IndyCar. You never hear about shit like this in Super Formula or any of the other series that Velaris supplies spec championship. It's just this ladder system.
Yeah,
I can't figure it out.
No, because again, like you have to buy all your cars from the series itself. You're not allowed to buy them secondhand from other teams. Two, the series themselves has to maintain the spec components on your car. The team can't touch them. Period. So if there's an issue with a spec part in the car, the series has to take care of it. You're not allowed to touch it.
Then restructure the department that maintains these cars. Something.
Yeah.
Because this keeps coming up. They've been littered with reliability problems since they've debuted, from dodgy clutches, dodgy gearboxes, now a cracked fuel tank. This keeps coming up. And look, you guys are making me feel bad for Dan Tictum. Do you know how much you screwed up when this is a thing?
Yeah. Trey has become sympathetic to Dan Tictum these last several weeks for a number of reasons.
I hate it with every fiber of my being, and here we are. Now, as a result of that disqualification, it actually promoted Callum Ilott to the win. Man, was due a bit of good luck, I suppose. So Ilott, who led a DRS train over the line himself. As a result, Callum Ilott inherited the ring. Christian Lundgaard got bumped up to second. And as a result of Mick Schumacher, who, by the way, had given himself an all sort of nasty flat spot of his tyres, and you could see the car vibrate on Mick Schumacher's onboard. So, third place in the end for Mick Schumacher in the end after another podium for Mick. I think it's fifth in the last six rounds now for Mick Schumacher.
It's his fifth in the last five races. It says it sits in the last seven. That makes it eight for the year in total, more than any other driver. Well, let's look at this Drivers Championship, because it was good going into this weekend, and it is still good, even though Yuki Tsunoda broke down in the sprint.
Yes. After the penalties are adjusted and all the other point scoring came into play, it is now Ferrari Driver Academy 1, 2, and 3 in the standings right now. Callum Ilott leads the way on 149 points. Mick Schumacher 6 behind now, all the way up to 2nd in the championship now on 143. Robert Schwartzman on 140 in third. And then just outside the looking glass looking in, Sonoda on 123 and Christian Lundgaard in fifth now on 116. So, yeah, it is. It's getting real close up there now. 33 points covering the top five in the championship. Still a handful of rounds to go in Formula 2 this year. But, it's getting real tight in there. The Ferrari Driver Academy battle we were all kind of hoping for. It's happening. It's on. And it's real.
On. And if you're Marcus Armstrong, you're making plans for year two. And if you're Giuliano Alesi, you're thinking, is there an out clause here, even though my father is John Alesi? It's been awesome. I will also wouldn't overlook a late push from Mazepin in sixth, Zhou in seventh. They're still triple digit points. King, urgency. Urgency. Formula 3 is going to be over sooner than you know it. This was the penultimate race weekend of the Formula 3 Championship, and oh my gosh!
Yeah, we are on DEFCON 2 in the American camp.
Is that oversimplified version of someone's about to get liberated?
we're hoping that Formula 3 gets liberated, but it's slipping out of our grasp.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
shall we say the American fumbled the bag on this one, shall we speak? Not entirely of his own doing. Formula 3 had two races again at Monza, and yet more qualifying hijinks. Go out of your way if you want to see another train and the Parabolica. It's always fun. Freaking do something about it, race control. Anyway, Frederick Zesty Vesty. Ended up winning the first race ahead of Theo Pourchaire. Oscar Piastri drove angry as all hell to go from 15th to 3rd after a chaotic qualifying session where everybody was trying to get toes off each other. What else is new in Monza these days?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was bad news for the American camp on this Discord because Logan Sargeant got spun out. And that wasn't good. Lads, what happened?
I didn't watch this race live, but yeah, that was super. That's not good. This was not a good weekend for Sargeant because that dropped him down out of the points under 26th, and then he was a classified non-finisher in the race two down in 24th. This was a terrible weekend for Logan Sargeant's title chances.
Yeah, because he ended up getting to race two. He was 20. I think he was 20 or somewhere to start the race.
Yeah,
and
26th.
And then there was a funny quote because he got up to 12th in the early going. He was passing cars for fun. And then he says about halfway through, yeah, I can effing win this thing. Until he goes and hits his teammate.
It was the guy whose name sounds like a freaking pharmaceutical product. Clement Novalak.
Yeah.
That one was kind of a shitty racing incident. Just one of those bad deals.
It was all sorts of messy. Piastri got a 5-place grid penalty for a separate incident. I'm still not quite sure what they're giving him the 5 places for, but here we are. Piastri was absolutely devastated. He had to be consoled by his DRS wing after being told of the penalty. Meanwhile, in race two, Jake Hughes would go on to take the win. Liam Lawson was came over the line in second, but surprise, surprise, another post-race penalty. He lost his podium finish. He ended up taking a time penalty. He would fall down the order. It promoted Pourchaire up to second. And finally, long overdue, Smolyar gets his first podium in Formula 3 in third, representing Russia. We love to see it. Iron Man himself was our fourth, Zendeli up there. It was messy, to say the least, on that one. Lawson ended up finishing 7th after the time penalty was factored in. So, go find these two races. They were chaos.
They were good.
To say the least.
I need to go catch up on these.
Yeah.
And also, Prema won another F3 team's title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just need to say, Prema, Titletown is back.
Titletown never left. It is still here in its crown and glory. Prema take the Formula 3 team. You have a, like, fleet of ridiculous drivers. You're probably going to have Arthur Leclerc next year. Like, just give him next year's 1-2 while you're at it.
Yeah,
Jesus.
And they're pretty much on pace to lock out the F2 team's title.
As you do. Happens every time. But, yeah, in case you guys didn't know already, Formula 3 season is about to hit the maximum number of rounds. It is the season finale this weekend at Mugello for Formula 3, and this is probably going to be your main event of the weekend. Two more races to decide the championship, and there are still six men eligible to win the championship. Oscar Piastri has 160 points in the lead, but as I mentioned earlier, he's got a five-place penalty for that first race. It will come into play, I'm sure. Logan Sargeant, and I wonder which the other members of my show are going to be rooting for, given all three are American here. I wonder if Formula 3 might get liberated or not.
This is our time. We're not going to get any closer now. 2010, 2010 in the first GP3 season. Joseph Newgarden finished fourth in championship.
Things turned out well for Joseph, didn't it? Maybe.
Actually, yeah, I made a mistake. 2010, Rossi was fourth. 2013, okay. Connor Daly was third. Let's not talk about Joseph Newgarden's time in GP3.
It all turned out well for all of them, just somewhere else. Just don't talk about Rossi's 2020. Oh, at the end of the day, indeed, we got six title contenders. Teo Porcher on 136, Liam Lawson on 127, Beckman on 123.5, Vesti on 117.5. Any one of these drivers can still win the championship. And we gotta wake up early as fuck to watch this.
Get up. You guys are getting up at 3 a.m. to watch the Formula 3 season finale. That's what we like to see. We want to see America maybe come through, because Britain hasn't got a dog in this fight.
So you see America maybe finish first.
Look, I've been on for like 245 of these episodes. I basically am half American at this point. Like let's go Logan Sargeant. Although I'd be totally happy with an Oscar Piastri, because he's a funny man on Twitter and he seems like an all-round stand-up dude. He's funny. We like funny on this show.
I will be in trouble.
Indeed. So yeah, that's your main event next weekend. Forget about Formula 1 at Mugello. It's going to be terrible, probably. That's your main event. Get up at 9 in the morning for it, UK time. You will not regret it. It's going to be hilarious seeing Formula 3 cars at Mugello. They probably can actually race around this place. It shall be lit. Check it out then. In the meantime, also, before I end the show, James Candice on our Discord server saying Oscar Piastri and his DRS will have a wonderful celebration if they win the title.
Oh, it's going to be like Edge and Lita or Raw in 2006. We're not going there this depth.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure Matt Hardy would have his say in the matter. Anyway. That'll do it for episode 261. Check back for 262 later in the week. Until then, basically, you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. Our Twitter handles at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckby917 for Cam, who is here in spirit and was half asleep. God bless him. You can follow us on Twitter at motorsport_101, and you can back us financially on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows. Until we catch up, probably another week away from that, so you know, keep it coming. And if you like, back at the $10 level, you can get access to our supporters club and our Discord server, where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded and get early access to all our video shows in the future as well. I've been Andre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Ryan Garrett King. Until next time, sayonara.
Forza Minardi, y'all. Grande Machina. Grande fucking machina.